Welcome back to the Green Zone post-game show, 39-32, the drama at BMO Field in
excitement.
Toronto.
Thriller.
As Mario Alford takes it to the house, 9 seconds left when he crosses the goal line after the Argos tie it with a touchdown and a two-point convert shortly after Brett Lawther missed a field goal that could ice the game. Instead of being up by 10, they're only up by 8. Heidi, you're up next. What are you thinking tonight after the Riders win?
I just am questioning myself on whether I'm such a homer that I get so annoyed at, like, Glenn Suter, and I'm not too sure who he was working with.
Marshall Ferguson tonight.
Yeah. It seems that most of the conversation was focused on Toronto and not a lot on the Rough Riders, and that irks my butt, but I also wonder if I'm really slanted.
I hear this a lot, Heidi, and I've heard it over the years, and it happens in hockey too, right, Daryl? You know this. People are like, oh, the Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson can only talk about the Maple Leafs and don't give anybody else credit.
Yep.
Absolutely. I don't watch. I guess I'm not watching the game like a fan watches the game. So I'm not absorbing that as going, how much are they talking about one team over the other? So I'm like, I'll take Heidi's word for it that they might have been talking more about Toronto than the Riders, but I'm not sure.
Toronto had the ball more than Saskatchewan. They had it more in terms of time of possession. So they're also the reigning Grey Cup champions, so I guess you put a little more focus on them. But
yeah, that impacts the whole, and they do production meetings on some of the storylines they go into. Mm-hmm. But
I never focused on that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we do hear that, and fans think that a lot. Fans also think Glenn Suter's biased against the Rough Riders. He's scared to show that that's the team he used to play for.
They think he's
really
overcompensating to protect himself from sounding like a Rider homer by going the other way because he played for Saskatchewan. That is not at all.
I don't think that's
what's going on.
Yeah, no, but people think that, and some nights maybe they are. Saskatchewan was, in a lot of ways,
about the broadcast is when they get blatant stuff wrong. If I hear him say one more time, I don't know if that was catchable, I am going to flip a table on pass interference. It doesn't matter. You don't know if it's catchable because the guy interfered with him, so how do you know if he can catch the ball?
Yeah.
Like, they took that out of it a long time ago. If you grab a receiver, it doesn't matter where the ball's going. It's pass interference.
Mm-hmm. That's why you got passionate on when he said that.
Oh, man!
Yeah, a couple times, yeah. Then we all laugh when he says, no, it's never over the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
CFL games are never over.
I don't know if that was catchable.
He's a defensive back.
Look at my gray hair. See what's happening?
He's a former defensive back. Of course, Glenn's going to say that. So Heidi might be right. You know, I don't hear it that way, but maybe other fans do, and maybe a lot of Rider fans think that too, but.
I might have to listen a little bit closer next time.
Well, another thing to track for Belton Johnson's Beast and Beast.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Next week, it'll be Glenn Suter talks too much about the other team.
All right.
Maybe it's true.
Thank you for the call, Heidi. I know you're not the only one out there, by the way. True, I know that. Yeah. You're not the only one. Mm-hmm. Carol in Regina, what are you thinking tonight?
Well, I thought it was more exciting than it had to be. But it was a great game. And we won. That's the most important thing. But I was just thinking in the past when I've always cringed when there was a kickoff or a punt and there was a nice return. It was half and half that if there was a penalty and was brought back for illegal block or holding. This year, that seems to be a lot better on as far as the Riders are concerned, from my point of view, anyway.
On the returns, yeah. Especially, I was expecting a flag on that return by Mary Alford. We'd seen like 28 penalties all game, and none on the decisive return, which was a bit of a surprise. So maybe they have been told to let those returns go, because that's always discouraging. You see somebody make a great play, and there's some inconsequential block on the other side of the field, and a flag flies. Yeah, that's a great point. And there haven't been as many called back, but it is still pretty early in the season.
But I'm just saying, especially on the from the rider's point of view, it seems like there would be a good return, and then it would be negated. And I figured, you know, like that's frustrating. So this year, that they seem to have been a bit more cautious or more aware of, or maybe just lucky that they were facing the right direction when the block was made. But anyway, that's an improvement from the past few years anyway.
And Carol, I know there are conversations in the officiating in the CFL because they don't want to bog down the game with penalties. Like, there's probably a penalty on every game.
Every play?
Or every play.
There was tonight, wasn't there?
Olam in a hole, just put the hands in the middle of the chest and drive you off the ball, Jamie.
Well, no, but outside of that, illegal contact on a receiver and things of that nature. I know they do a conscious effort to try and call the games the penalties that they feel are consequential to the game, the actual play. Like if the DB jams a little bit 6 yards instead of five, but the ball just got thrown to the opposite side of the field. Okay, I'm not going to call a penalty way over here. It had nothing to do with the play.
But it was a dirty game tonight. After Duncan Busby took out with that chop block, cut block, that made it dirty, right?
I still don't think that should have been a penalty. I think they
was called
because
from
of
the review. It wasn't thrown on the field.
Nope.
They thought, you know what,
he's got the hurt. We better call a penalty. Because the rule is there's a box. It goes from the tight end, and there were six offensive linemen. So there was that third offensive lineman. If you roll that play, look where, who was it? Zach Fry is, and just hold the line. The ref is almost right behind where Zach Fry was. So you can actually see, and Duncan Busby comes up, and he stops right where that. They practice this, and he stops, and he cuts them. And it's within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage. I thought that block was within area that you're allowed to go low.
You're in the minority on social media tonight, by the way,
Jimmy. Really?
Oh, gosh, yeah. There's people saying that Duncan Busby should be suspended for the rest of the season.
No.
I didn't say I'm saying that. I'm just saying that.
Are they Argo fans?
Some of them are media people. Lots of them are media people thinking that's a filthy shot.
That's a perfectly legal block.
You're allowed to block low in that box. Read the rule book. Some people really need to read the rule book.
Yes, it's legal. Should it be allowed? Should it be something that they make illegal?
Any low block?
Yeah, cut blocks like that.
I guess they'd have to look at the stats and see if there were any significant injuries like that.
There was tonight.
Yeah, there was.
1-877-332-8255 is the fan line. Carol, thanks for the call. As we'll go to Dallas. Hi, Dallas.
Hey, gentlemen. I just want to give a quick shout out to Jared there. I appreciate him kind of thinking of me. But I was going to agree with Heidi, though. Like, I've made a comment about Glenn Suter. It was like last year. I can't remember exactly verbatim what it was. But something now, watch. If Suter listens to this or whatever, he catches wind, maybe he'll change his game up. But when Corey Mace is challenged, I've seen this even last year, too. He'll throw a challenge, and Suter will always make it look like, well, I don't think that's, I don't see it. And he does it. So, I mean, I don't know if he does it to other teams, because granted, I haven't watched all the other CFL games, but you pay attention to it and watch. He always like downplays thinking that Corey Mace's challenge is going to fail. So something to take note of. Like some of the other callers have said, it was too close of a game. And granted, we won, so that's great. But when we start facing Western opponents, they got to clean that up. Like, I just can't understand how, with the lack of discipline, we go from last week to here, and there was that much of an increase in penalties. Like, what did they do in practice? What did Corey Mace say? What was going through the players' minds? So, granted, we don't see how Corey Mace handles his disciplinary measures with the players. So, because on the field, you don't necessarily see him reaming them out, and he's pretty quiet about it. So, I won't say Corey Mace isn't, but I'd like to see more of a presence. And I think there is definitely a valid point to discipline your players, because then they're costing their entire team the game. The one thing I wanted to quickly ask, though, is with these offset, like, maybe you guys can provide some insight on that. I never understood this, and I don't recall it being an issue until post-COVID, is with offsetting objectionable conduct penalties. I've seen, and I'm sure there was one case in this game too, where if one player hits another, the ref's automatically going to cost both, like both teammates, the offsetting penalties.
Yeah.
Why? Like, why is it they need to revamp that a little bit? I think because I've seen way too many occasions where one player blatantly is being the aggressor. The other one isn't doing anything other than just basically being defensive and not fighting back, but not just being like a limp noodle so he gets hurt, right? So why do the refs not pay more attention and only give one of the objectionable conduct penalty to the player that was the major aggressor, and then fine, when they're both guilty, fine, give them both. But I don't understand why it's always an automatic. They both get it offset. It just wastes time and it's ridiculous. So if you guys want to provide some insight on that, but yeah, thanks for taking my call.
I believe Dallas on this misconduct thing is this allows them to try to I hate to use the word manage the game, but manage the game, because now there is a rule that a second misconduct penalty, you get kicked out. So if you just give it to one, you're almost allowing that other guy. Now he's got a free shot, right? Because he's only I don't have a misconduct. I got a free shot. But if you give them to both, now it's, hey, okay, boys, one more and you're out of here. And I think that is what's happening.
That's interesting logic.
Where they're going, let's do offsetting just so if it's getting greasy like tonight was, that if one guy gets a misconduct for something and you don't give it to the other guy who might have done something a little more minor, that now all of a sudden that guy's like, oh, I got a free one now. Even
interesting
though,
theory, Jamie.
That's my theory.
I don't know if that's the truth or not, but. You know, as a former ref, you're often looking for the more aggressive penalty. And if they both get involved, even if it's there's a little bit of difference, you almost have to give the same penalty to each of them. Even if one guy is more aggressive, as you say. But I used to try to say, this penalty, you did something, the other guy didn't do anything. Just give out the one penalty, and that hopefully will stop them from the next time. So I think it's usually more effective, but. Your point's kind of interesting. Maybe they, because of the misconducts and the
especially in this game, I think they're like let's make sure these guys are get one away from getting kicked out and they know it.
Yeah,
because the game was getting away. Because I think what was it, three times tonight they did offsetting misconduct penalties.
I'm pretty sure it was.
I'm just gonna go through on the objectionable conduct tonight for those two sides. Because there is a few, that is not all the penalties. They don't have all the penalties on here. That is not helpful, because that is not 29 penalties or whatever it was. How many penalties were there?
There was
29 penalties tonight. Mm-hmm. Gross. As we continue here on the Green Zone, 1-877-332-8255 is the fan line. We'll get right back to the fan line. Belton Johnson's Beasts and Beefs. You'll hear from Coach Mace as well on discipline next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the Green Zone post-game show. Riders win 39-32 thanks to Mario Alford's 99-yard kick return touchdown with seconds to go as the winner. As we go to Grant coming up next. Grant, what are you thinking tonight with the Riders going to 3-0 on the season?
Way to go, boys. I'm very happy for you guys. 3-0, you should be very happy. Can't wait for you to be 8-0, and then Winnipeg comes in, and then we do it again on Labor Day. Or the next week, pardon me, Labor Day, and then the next week.
Do you think it's coming down to the Riders and Bombers in the West this year, Grant?
I do. I love it.
Where's the West final going to be played, Saskatchewan or Winnipeg?
Winnipeg, man. Winnipeg and then Grey Cup and Winnipeg. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. You can't write a story better than that.
No, it's going to be revenge, Grant, for that time when the Riders hosted the Grey Cup and Winnipeg was in here in their locker room. We got to flip the script, I think, right? No?
Man, no way, no way. You know, they talk about dynasty. We've lost the last three. That's not a dynasty. You got to win to be a dynasty. So
yeah.
This year in Winnipeg, dynasty, baby. And
well,
we're going to kick some green ass.
Well, Grant, I'll tell you what. If the Riders go to the Grey Cup, they're not going to screw it up like the Bombers did in Saskatchewan against the Toronto Argonauts. Because by this time, the Riders will have a kicker to be able to win a game, unlike the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the 2022 Grey Cup. I can't wait for Labor Day now.
They play each other three times at this regular season, twice in the preseason. They can see each other six times this year.
That's crazy. The preseason. That is crazy.
Yeah, unbelievable. So the proof is in the pudding. Those are the games that match it up, right? You'll can tell who's the better team by who wins the series between Winnipeg and Saskatchewan.
Well, let's go to Tim up next. Tim, what do you think on the Riders starting 3-0?
Great game. I think there's still some opportunity with the offense. You know, we were rolling pretty good, but I'd love to see them put it away a little more. We had the chance down at the end to really put it away, and then, of course, it was a missed field goal. Defense still got some work, but my big question is Locker wearing the same underwear for the last three games?
I don't know what Locker's wearing. He wore the Rider jersey, right, on the watch party last week, so maybe he's wearing his Rider jersey again this week.
Hasn't been wearing any Oilers stuff.
Nope. Nope, he has not. Mm. Should have worn the blue jersey for game six. I really do believe he should have worn the blue jersey
for game six. Yeah, I think so, too. Have you told him that? I know that you've told him that.
Of course I've told him that. Let's get to Belton Johnson's Beasts and Beefs.
From chop blocks and dirty hits to big-time catches and fans in the stands.
That was a good old Southern spanking right there. Mm-hmm. I love every bit of it.
You never know what'll catch Belton's attention. It's Belton's Beasts and Beefs.
The good, the bad, through the eyes of our game day analyst and Grey Cup champ, Belton Johnson. The good, the beast, the bad, the beefs. Where do we start?
Let's start with the beast.
The beast?
Yeah.
Okay. Good news first from Belton Johnson. Let's go.
All right. First quarter there. Tommy Tugboat Stevens run that short yard for major gain. And
19-yarder.
And I think I saw a bit of a stiff arm in there. I don't know. They must have been practicing stiff arming in practice here or something. So I love that. Let me see what else I got here. In the second quarter, the Riders D held strong at the goal line because they got that turnover on downs. Heck of a play there. And, you know, again, Super Mario saved the day. That probably should be the beast of all beasts. But I got in the third quarter, Trevor Harris to Dante Meyer for that 70-yard touchdown. Because mm-hmm. in my head, like, they finna put them away. This is how you start the game. Start fast. So that was my beast right there. That
Dante Meyers, 70-yard touchdown.
Did you see that run, man?
Oh, yeah. He held Ryan everybody. Yep.
He had some wheels, too, man.
There is that one linebacker.
Well, that linebacker pretty close to catching him, though, too. Yep. I'm 35.
D'Arcangelo.
Yep.
Pretty fine. Oh, but. Dante Meyers. It was his night tonight. It was Emelis in the first game. It was Keyshawn Johnson game two.
Yep.
It was Dante Meyers night game three, 125 yards, two touchdowns. The 70-yarder gets the beast from Belton. Now we're going to the beefs.
We're going to the beef.
The bad news.
All right. First quarter, a big play. Who is it to Mitall or Mitell? But Argos, right? And the caller, we had a caller said the same thing. Why didn't LeCombo
knock it down?
Just knock it down. He was in perfect play to knock that down, right? Because you can't allow big play. You cannot keep doing this. Second quarter, Marcus Sales, that bobbled interception. He had it, and the Argos, they wouldn't have had that kick before the half, right? Mm-hmm. So, got to catch that man. And then Argos would not have that kick before the half.
Nope.
Got to. Third quarter, Trevor Harris, threw that interception actually right after that, right? So, and I think my beef is the same as it was last week. Brett Lowther.
Ooh.
He could have iced it.
You need that field goal, man.
Yep.
The score ended
up being. Iced.
It could have been done. It could have been 35-24.
Also, we haven't brought this up yet. Do you remember what happened at the end of the game? Remember what happened at the end of the game? Was I was bringing it up. Ryan Dinwiddie accepted that holding penalty.
Ah,
yeah. And I'm like, why wouldn't you have the 50? What are you doing? Oh, yeah. Giving them another chance. And I think they came down and finished that drive with a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that's kept that drive going. I couldn't believe Ryan Dinwiddie did that. Because Brett Lawther from 55, there's no guarantee he was going to make that one. So thanks to Ryan Dinwiddie for that. But Brett Lawther gets the beef again.
Two in a row, man. 33 times. I'm done.
Now let's get some post-game thoughts. This time we start off on the defensive end with A.J. Allen, four tackles and a sack.
I mean, we could definitely do better, but there's always room for improvement, and we won the game. So I can't really say much about that. We won the game, so I'm proud of everybody, you know what I'm saying, team effort, and we got room for improvement for sure.
So adding on to that, how are you feeling that last drive of the game by the Argos? What was the feeling like?
Oh, we always have confidence when we're out there, right? We always got confidence that we can, when we're out there, we are able to make plays and do what we're supposed to get off the field. But, I mean, again, we had the confidence. It was just, you know, they put a good drive together and made some good throws and made some good plays after the catch. And fortunately got in the end zone. But, I mean, it's on us to play better and take away some of those options for sure.
So you've already spoke to the confidence a little bit, but you're a big part of that Riders special teams. How did it feel for the unit to get that win tonight?
Incredible. Those guys played amazing. We played amazing. And again, it's a unit thing, so I'm so proud of everybody, including Rio, and all the 12 guys on the field that are, you know, supposed to be those dogs to make those plays and counted on in those positions, right? They were at their best when they were required to be at their best, and nothing but proud for those guys.
Absolutely. All right, congrats on AJ.
Thank you so much.
One more. AJ, you got your first CFL sack tonight. How did it feel?
It felt incredible. Oh man, I've been looking for it. I've been waiting for it. Oh, it feels so good.
Tell us what you saw. Tell us what you saw.
It's also what I heard too. We had a specific blitz for what we thought they were going to do in that situation. And then I heard a keyword that I realized what was going to happen. So ran the blitz, worked out perfectly as we drew it up, and able to finish the play and make the sack and hit my celebration, my friends. So it felt great.
Awesome. Thanks, AJ.
Thank you so much.
That is AJ Allen, first career sack tonight. He's on special teams for that touchdown as well.
Mm-hmm.
Heck of a development player for AJ Allen on this one.
Well, then, because CJ Avery's hurt,
mm-hmm.
and he's a Canadian, so that can help them. Helps them an awful lot in the roster ratio.
Huge ratio breaker.
I wonder what key word he heard. Was it from the Argos offense there or something? And
I bet you.
Let me.
I bet you. Huh.
I like that, man. Ooh. That's why you got to be careful
like
what you
Andrew
say.
Harris and AJ Ouellette and those guys might know some of those. Yeah. Like, oh, if you hear this, they're going to run this.
Yeah.
That is how in-depth you can go, and if you don't change the verbiage,
you have to change it, man.
Gotta change it.
Even flag football tomorrow, I'm leery on some of my calls. People be hearing me out there.
Listen for the word.
Yep.
I've
Omaha.
It's like Bill Callahan with the Raiders against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Didn't change any of the verbiage, and John Gruden had the whole playbook. Anyways, more to come. Game Warriors, Unsung Heroes. We'll hear from Corey Mace as well on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the Green Zone postgame show. Jamie Nye, Daryl Davis, Belton Johnson, as the Riders are 3-0 in the season. 39-32 win. Mario Alford, the hero, as we'll hear from head coach Corey Mace from BMO Field.
I guess it goes to show no game is over till it's over, but were you preparing for overtime, Corey?
Honestly, I was looking at my overtime sheet, you know. I did think that we had a chance talking with Mark Mueller. I said, you know, depending on how far we get this return, you know, depending if we're going to play for overtime or we're going to be able to go kick one.
Yeah.
And special teams did the rest. So incredible for those guys to be able to share that moment together. They worked so hard, you know, to have big returns and to have a walk-off essentially like that. That was incredible.
What does it say about Mario, though? I mean, you give him an inch and he'll take a mile?
I think so. You know, he's been outstanding this entire season. and you know, our special teams coaches, Kent Majeri and Jeff Higgins, you know, they put in a lot of work for these guys. And, how dialed those players are in the special teams meetings, you know, it's showing out there on the field. So, again, man, I'm just, you know, above anything else, just happy for those guys to be able to share that kind of moment for us.
Two things. One, the penalties have to be a concern.
Yeah, you know, to this point, you know, I was kind of championing the guys, and, you know, it's unfortunate because we spoke about it at halftime, but, you know, week one, I think we had 5 penalties, and week 2, we had 3. So we were on a good trajectory. I don't know the exact number, but it's probably north of 200. You know, I mean, it was disaster. And that'll go show you. In this league, it's, you know, really make it tough to win when you're giving away free yards. So we obviously have to get better at that. But to be able to come out here against the defending Grey Cup champions and Grey Cup MVP and walk out of here with a win on a short week, we'll feel good about that.
What is it about the East Division that seems to have agreed with you to start the year?
Yeah, you know, this is CFL, man. There's, you know, look at Winnipeg started well in 6 last year. Yeah. Or something. You know, we don't believe in the early success or failure teams. It's we know when it's important. However, every game is important. And for us, you know, that's, we're just focusing a week at a time. So the goal is to come here and win, and ultimately we did that.
When you see them come back and be able to tie the game, I mean, did they do anything different, or did they just execute?
No, they were just executing. Again, I thought in the second half, you know, we were just we're in situations potentially get off the field, and we're giving them free yards, you know, and you know, not only is the yardage, it's the momentum as well, yeah. You know, but they executed plays, you know, when we needed to, and we didn't. Ultimately, they did. Again, that's a good team. I know what it looks like right now, but they do a good job over there, and I know that coaching staff very well. They're a hell of a staff. So, you know, we didn't make quite enough, unfortunately, you know, in offensive defense, but special teams is super crucial in the CFL, and certainly our boys stood up.
Well, especially when the special teams kept the door open for you.
Yeah, no, exactly, 100%. So, again, we would have been happy to get a decent return and play for a game winner off of 12. You know, we still would have put the trust in them out there, Mario and the boys went took care.
Coach, Brett missing another crucial kick 2 weeks in a row now. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, same thing. I mean, the reality is if we didn't score there, we would have threw Brett right out there to go win us the game. And he's won a lot of games for this organization over the years. I think he's going to win a lot more, to be honest with you. It's the utmost trust and faith in the guy. Not faltered with that. So that's our guy, and he'll continue to be our guy.
That is Corey Mace. Another
vote of confidence.
There we go.
That's why
he's our guy.
Probably not Brett Lawther that gets the whole share of the blame on this one, from what's going on the field for the Riders. But they are 3-0 after some drama in T.O. Let's get to the game, Warriors.
Warriors, come out to play.
From big plays, big catches, and big hits. Now, Game Warriors.
Well, for the third straight week, we start with the winning side, and that winning side is the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Offensive Game Warrior tonight.
Well, we could give it to the returner, Mario Alford, but he already got play of the game, so let's give it to Dante Myers. 4 catches, 125 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And he's Belton's beast because of that 70-yarder. Mm-hmm.
Dante Myers, the Rough Riders' offensive game warrior, as we slide to Toronto's offensive game warrior tonight.
Number 10, Kevin Mattel, their wide receiver. 7 catches, 98 yards, and a touchdown.
He's a big dude, eh?
He is. He looks like a running back. I keep looking at him and thinking he's a running back, but he ain't. He made some tough catches tonight, too. Only missed one that was targeted at him.
Wow.
Where are you going next? Jamie, defensive game warrior?
6'1", 230.
Yeah.
Receiver for my town.
Big dude.
Oh. He's a big guy to try to bring down. Mm-hmm. As we go to the defensive game warrior for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, Daryl Davis.
No, we talked about A.J. Allen, but I think Tavon Campbell played pretty well tonight. 4 defensive tackles and that 1 interception, and he was all over the field. Played hard, hit hard. So we're giving it to number 26, cornerback for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, Tavon Campbell.
His first interception back in the CFL, of course, after so many years in the National Football League, is Tavon Campbell. And that was a big one down the field. Although, unfortunately, Trevor Harris gave it right back.
Yeah. Slowed it down a play or something.
As we go to Toronto's game warrior.
Defensive game warrior number 94, Andrew Chatfield. 5 tackles and a sack. The Rough Riders have given up. Oh, the ungodly 2 sacks in 3 games.
Unbelievable.
1 in each of the last 2. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is.
Chatfield was the one who did get through, but also pretty decent showing from him and the defensive line.
No doubt. It is something else that the Riders' offensive line has beat up as they've been. Only 2 sacks allowed. Yeah, and tonight on the ground, too. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, they opened some holes.
They did. They're playing exceptionally well. I'm impressed with that group. Their patchwork. You can tell the difference. Who patched together the better offensive line? And both offensive lines are suffering because of who they've lost, right? Yeah. Saskatchewan is able to put something together and protected their quarterback and ran the football and threw the ball pretty well. And Toronto didn't do nearly as well in that department.
Okay, so there's your offensive and defensive game warriors for the Riders and the Toronto Argonauts. You heard from one coach. Let's hear from a very, 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 very upset Ryan Dinwiddie as he was talking to reporters postgame.
On the positive note, in the third quarter, what did you think about when, you know, your team kind of recovered after giving up a pick, then they get a pick and put you on the 1-yard line after you got stopped on the 1-yard line earlier in the game?
Yeah, I thought we got beat up front. You know, we got one of our guards at 280 pounds. I don't know what he did all offseason.
Ryan, did it just feel like, you know, you get a little bit of momentum and then all of a sudden you couldn't get a stop? Did it kind of feel like that on the sidelines for you guys?
Yeah, it was the whole game, right? As soon as we get a drive together, right, we're not playing all together. Defense got to step up too, right? It wasn't anything crazy that they were doing, right? They didn't have us schemed up. They're just playing pitch and catch. And then the penalties. We have more penalty yards than our freaking offense, right? And they all were selfish ones. So I told those guys, someone's going home tomorrow. Some heads are rolling. I ain't putting up with that stuff no more.
Woo! Man!
That is spicy from Ryan Dinwiddie tonight from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quiet walk into the meeting on Monday. Hey,
man,
Bill?
Man, that's head down. I'm not making eye contact with nobody.
Especially if you're one of the guys who took the unnecessary roughness penalties for Toronto. There is a few of them tonight. More coming up. Unsung Heroes. Also, a quick little thought from, I guess, Trevor Harris is feeling a bit under the weather tonight. And a wrap with bold predictions next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Before we get to Unsung Heroes on the Green Zone postgame show, Trevor Harris wasn't feeling that well. So just some brief comments from the quarterback. After this game tonight, you started talking about, I believe, the interception.
Well, I mean, you don't want to take any credit away from them, but I put the ball in harm's way on the interception. Can't do that. You know, I thought he was going to expand, and I tried to fit it behind him, and he got a piece of it. And when balls get tipped over the middle, that's what happens. And so I just can be better in that situation. You know, certain little things, you know, execution-wise, that we can always be better at offensively. And, you know, we've just got to make sure that we get better. The penalties obviously hurt us, and so lessons learned. But the great teams are going to learn the lessons and apply them moving forward.
And you want to get the wins early, too. I mean,
absolutely. Everyone matters. Yeah. Everyone matters.
What was it like on the sidelines when Alfred ran that back tonight?
Insane. And I wish I didn't feel so under the weather, and I would probably have celebrated quite a bit more, but just super happy for Mario. He's just an explosive returner, obviously. Borderline Hall of Famer, you know. And he's just, we're fortunate to have him. I love that guy, too.
That is brief comments from Trevor Harris tonight.
He played pretty well for a guy under the weather.
Yeah.
234, 2 touchdowns and an interception. Mm-hmm. He only threw 17 times. Maybe that's because he was feeling under the weather. They just ran the ball.
Well, that carried 17.
What does he do well, though? How many? What was his completion percentage? Wasn't it like
11 70? For 17? That's pretty good. That's
76.5% completion percentage.
Wow. He's usually up there.
That's,
he's one of the all-time leaders.
Let's get to the unsung hero.
They weren't the game warrior, but they definitely made an impact. Time to sing the praises of the game's unsung heroes.
Darrell Davis Riders unsung hero, who's it go to?
Number 17, Tommy Stevens. Six carries, 30 yards, one touchdown. Unstoppable.
Oh, man, that's stiff.
Tommy Stevens. Everybody's talking about what a great free agent signing he was. We've been saying that right from the beginning. Gives them the perfect quarterback room, doesn't it? Proven veteran, a backup who started quite a bit, and a third stringer who can't be stopped short yardage, and Jack Cohn sitting there learning
from
all
of them. And the young prospect,
yep,
right?
In behind all shape. Yep. Yep.
And that's for the Toronto Argos.
Well, Jamie, you're always big on special teams, right? So...
I just, if a guy steps up and has a good night on specials, give him a shout out.
Well, here we go then. How about number 41, Jonathan Edward, defensive back with the Toronto Argonauts. Three special teams tackles. If he had made a fourth, he would have been player of the game.
One short as Mario Alford ran for the touchdown. There you have it. The unsung heroes tonight. For the Riders and the Argos. 39-32. That is the final score. The Riders are 3-0 on the season. They'll try to go 4-0 next week when they take on the BC Lions. After two road games out east, it's a home game at Mosaic Stadium as the Riders might be in their indigenous logo for So they will take on the BC Lions. 5 o'clock local time, the Green Zone pregame show next Saturday will be at 3 o'clock. Bold predictions on the pregame show. I haven't even tallied them up yet to know who actually had the most points. Ooh. Well, it's definitely not me. All right. Joe Robustelli, one catch, one target, 8 yards, eighth the longest. Daryl swept all four of those. On those ones, Brett Lawther, 2 attempts, 1 make, 0 point afters missed, and a 16-yarder longest. Belton gets 1 for the longest. You had the lowest at 39.
Yep.
A PAT miss. You and Daryl both said 0.
He missed the PAT?
No, he didn't.
He didn't.
Oh, okay. Right.
You both said 0, so you get the point. A 1 make, I said he'd make 2. 2 attempts, I'd say he'd only attempt 2, so I got 2 points there. Pass defense. What did they allow tonight? 259 yards. You said 253, Belton Johnson. Good job. Longest, that was like the first pass of the game, give Belton the point, because it was 41 yards. And that, then Belton said 36, and then he was the longest. So you got a point there. 2 touchdowns. You and Daryl said 1, and we didn't say Campbell get an interception. So Belton got 3 points there. We all said the Riders. Belton had the highest total score of 55 total points and the highest for the Riders at 40 in a 39-32 win. So you'll get the extra point. Belton got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Daryl got 1, 2, 3. Daryl also got 7. So you didn't make up any ground on Daryl. I got
1, 2, 3 points
tonight. So Daryl goes to 31. I'm at 24, and Belton is now at 16 for the bold predictions on the Green Zone pregame show. All righty. 39-32. Discipline a problem. Brett Lawther and the kicking still a problem. See, they're still, they can get so much better than this. Yeah. And they're 3-0.
Yeah, that's what it all boils down to, right? You got, as a coach, you're happy because you say, we're 3-0 despite not being perfect, and here's what we have to work on.
And, of course, the rest of the Canadian Football League this week. Tomorrow, the Calgary Stampeders take on the Ottawa Redblacks. It looks like Dustin Crum's going to get the start for Ottawa. Still no Drew Brown. So Calgary's going, they're going to try to go to 3-0 on the season tomorrow. The BC Lions without Nathan Rourke. Jeremiah Masoli, of course, made the move there this offseason. He will start in place of Nathan Rourke. And Zach Collaros' one-game suspension, of course, was served last week. Chris Treveller looked pretty impressive. But Zach Collaros will be at quarterback tomorrow as the Bombers will try to go to 2-0. The BC Lions will try to bring them back and go to 2-1 on the season. And once again, a reminder, we'll be here next Saturday for the next Green Zone Game Day. And a quick reminder, if you love the show, and we hear this all the time on social, Sometimes you have to get the kids to bed. You like listening it to the next day. We have changed where you find the Green Zone game days. It's in under its own category wherever you find your podcast. So find Green Zone game day, and it's all there. Pre-game, post-game, all there. It will be there throughout the entire season. So subscribe to that as well as the Green Zone with Jamie and Locker for all your Green Zone needs this football season. Have a great night. Special shout-out, Britton Gray, as always. Hey. Chance behind the glass. He is our guy. Abby Huffman helped us out with the post-game audio.
Scotty started.
In Toronto. Scotty Vickers started the show, of course, as well. Gentlemen, you have a great weekend, a full weekend for us with this Friday game. And we'll be back next Saturday for a Green Zone game day. Belton will join me Monday.
Yep.
Daryl's on every Wednesday on the Green Zone. We're hoping it doesn't rain for you all tomorrow. I know there's a lot of sports wrapping up this weekend. Hopefully Mother Nature gives us a favor.
But our farmers and our firefighters could use some rain.
Well, they could. Yes, they could.
Take it up north.
Rain up north. Rain on the farms.
Not of the city diamonds and soccer pitches
just
and football.
To 3 o'clock.
That's a big ask, I know. It's a big ask. Have a good weekend, everybody. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.